Hello everyone, and thank you for joining me today. I am Ken Hess with the Frugal Networker blog and ZDNet's Virtually Speaking blog. It is Monday, September 10th, 2012, and I'm speaking with SimForms CTO and co-founder Bassam Tabara and Director of Product Management Tim Helming. SimForm has an exciting announcement for you today, and after they make their announcement, we'll discuss their services in more detail.
So I'm Bassam. I'm the CTO and co-founder. When we started this company, we essentially started thinking about storage and how people are dealing with storage. And, you know, everybody's, as you know, there are hundreds of companies that are in the online storage business, and almost all of them follow the same architecture. Customers' data is stored in data centers. And as I'm sure you're well aware of, the economics of storing data in these data centers is actually upside down. If you look at the cost of a hard drive, say a 2 terabyte drive today, it's about $60 at Fry's. Right? To store that same 2 terabyte in a data center, you'd be paying something like $500 or more a month. Right? So we looked at that problem, and we looked at how can we actually build an online storage solution that could offer the same properties, you know, secure, reliable, performance storage with essentially local storage economics. You know? And that's essentially what SimForm is about. We are the only online storage provider that has a decentralized storage network. It's a very unique architecture. Our customers, when they join the system, they are not only consuming storage, they're not storing data, they are also helping run the network. They're contributing some of their resources, some of their disk space to help run SimForm.
One of the things you can find a lot of data out there that indicates that the majority of people have a lot of unused disk space, and so that's one of the things that SimForm takes advantage of, this fact that there's a lot of unused local storage, which is just disks spinning and burning up electricity and not actually doing much good. So we aggregate that resource and make it available as a highly secure and reliable backup and store solution.
So essentially, you know, that's SimForm in a nutshell. What we wanted to kind of brief you on today is our kind of pricing and packaging us, and I'll let Tim lead with that.
Yeah. So as Bassam mentioned, we have the opportunity to turn traditional storage economics on its head, and we've done that so far by having very low per gigabyte pricing and having a certain amount of cloud storage that folks could get free. We're taking that a step further now so that if SimForm customers contribute at a 2-to-1 ratio versus what they're consuming, then they don't have to pay any cash at all for cloud storage, and there's no limit on that. So if a SimForm customer fits into the typical model, they have more than enough disk space available to contribute at a 2-to-1 ratio versus what they want to back up. And if they do that, they never have to pay us a dime. We refer to it as being able to pay with bucks or bytes, and we're biasing it toward paying us with bytes. That's essentially the premise of this new update we're making.
So Ken, for example, if you wanted to store 500 gigabytes in our system, you would essentially contribute a terabyte of your local storage, and as long as you're able to do that, your 500 gigabytes in the cloud are free, unlimited, free for life.
And beyond that, we also actually are, for customers who want to take that even a little bit further, if they have a surplus of bytes that they're contributing to us, we even will apply that toward the cost of their technical support plan. So if somebody opts for one of our paid support plans, they can pay for support in bytes as well. So we're essentially introducing the byte or gigabyte of contributed storage as a new form of currency within the SimForm network. We are sold, as you might imagine, pretty heavily through the channel, and we have been briefing channel partners on this shift for about a month now, and we've had very, very enthusiastic response. In fact, Maybe even a little surprising for us ourselves, we have had 100% of the partners that we've talked to, which is a pretty high percentage of them that we've already spoken to so far, 100% of those have opted in to this new pricing and packaging method. So a lot of enthusiasm. We've gotten a lot of comments back saying, hey, this is really ideal for me to offer to my customers. MSPs can bundle cloud backup now into their MSP offering and offer their customers very competitive prices or free because of what we're offering here.
Tim, does this make sense? Do you?
Yeah, it's very interesting. In fact, I think when Lindsay first sent me the information on your company, I thought it sounded so crazy. I just had to know about it. And, you know, it's really very bizarre. And I guess I don't understand. How do you guys make money?
Great question. So there are a couple of answers to that. Part of it is simply that we will have some customers still opting to pay us in bucks. But the other really fundamental answer to that is that we are building a very valuable asset. If you look at the cost of building a traditional data center, if you wanted to build an exabyte data center, that would cost you around $1 billion just to build, not to mention the operating cost. We're going to build a virtual data center, a massive virtual data center, at a tiny, tiny fraction of that cost. So we are building up an extremely valuable asset by doing this. So it's a combination of making money from the bucks payments that we do continue to receive, as well as building up this strategic asset in the Synform virtual data center.
I think another point to make here, Ken, is that, you know, we're not losing money on running this network, which is, you know, because of our unique architecture, our customers are actually helping run the system, right? So it's not that when 100 customers show up that we have to go figure out how to provision servers, right? When they show up, they're actually bringing the servers with them, right? So it's a very, very different model than what people are typically used to.
Sure, I get it. It's kind of a peer-to-peer model, kind of like those SETI things that people used to research on, except they're actually getting something back.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. Yeah, where people are helping us run the system, and as a result, they're getting value in return.
The other analogy we like to draw is to Skype. Skype, of course, is a peer-to-peer network, and without laying a single foot of fiber, they built the world's largest telecommunications network. That was, if they had started out saying we're going to build the largest telecom company, no one would have taken them seriously. But by creating a compelling and easy-to-use product on peer-to-peer technology, they did exactly that.
Sure, yeah. I was drawing the parallel between Skype and you guys myself. In fact, like I said, it was such a crazy idea and brilliant, actually. I thought, you know, it's kind of like a Dropbox should be, I guess, because,
right,
you know, you store your files on your drive, and you also kind of have that mirrored in the cloud. But to me, that's kind of inefficient. They should actually do something like what you're doing. They should leverage, you know, the local hard drive for everyone, I guess. But anyway, it's brilliant. But the one question I do have about it is bandwidth. I mean, you're taking a terabyte of my space, but you're also taking my bandwidth to replicate data. So how does that work, your replication over someone's, you know, I have a nice broadband here at my house with, I don't know what it is, 1.5 up and 8 down or whatever. So how does that work?
So we have we take the bandwidth that we consume is proportional to the amount of data you want to store in the system. So if you want to store a terabyte, which is, by the way, a lot for most folks, right? We'd end up using something like a megabit of your bandwidth, right? So, and we find that the schedule actually works really well for a lot of for our customers, especially if you look at, you know, the trend on bandwidth and broadband rates in the country and across the world, that, you know, we now see some of our customers are 100 megabit symmetric, or, you know, they're on Fios or any of that, these high broadband plans. And even the ones that don't have the, you know, the best broadband they, when they do the math, they could easily upgrade to a business plan or something that's more, you know, faster, and they'd still be ahead in terms of the value they're getting for SimFarm. So our bandwidth schedule is low. Like I said, it's about a megabit for a terabyte, and you know, that's today in these days readily available.
So what happens when, say, someone that's basically donating 2 or 3 terabytes of space, you know, for their share, what happens if they discontinue the service? Do they just rip the 3 terabytes space away from the shared source? And what happens to the data on that?
Yeah, so we built the system to actually not make any assumptions about the reliability of the individual nodes. Nor do we trust individual nodes. So at any point, anybody in our system could have a hardware failure or decide to leave without incurring any loss in the system. And let me describe how that works. When your data is stored in the system, we actually, you're running an agent on your machine. That agent will first encrypt your data and then slice it up into tiny pieces that are spread across our network. So a typical file will go to hundreds, maybe, you know, depending on the size of the file, it could be thousands of locations, right? That data is stored redundantly. So we're storing these little slices that have built-in redundancy in them. So when some of the nodes, you know, up to 30% of the nodes that we store the data on could go down, right, without us suffering any loss. Now, obviously, in the background, we're monitoring all these slices of files. We're looking at the redundancy rates. And as we detect that, you know, nodes are leaving the system or there is hardware loss or any events that can cause loss of data, we will, in the background, trigger the regeneration of this data to bring the redundancy levels back up. Think of it as if you've used RAID arrays, it's not much different from RAID. You know, you could lose, if you have RAID 5, you could lose one of your drives. And as long as you replace it within a window of time, you will not suffer any loss, right? It's a similar thing. We call it RAID 96. It's running across the internet. It's constantly running in the background. It's making sure that we're protecting your data.
Yeah, I like that. In fact, I guess that's why you require a 2-to-1 ratio, right, is for that redundancy?
Yeah. It's for the okay. Part of it covers redundancy, but yes, that's exactly why.
Well, the other implication of that is that as a contributing peer in the SimForm network, you don't have any exposure to any kind of harmful files, nor can you look at them, because what you receive in your contribution folder is not, in fact, any actual files. You receive a bunch of encrypted blobs that are all fragments of different files. So there is nothing in there that you could make heads or tails of. It's just encrypted blobs of data. So there's nothing that can self-execute on your machine. There's nothing that can get you in legal trouble if somebody's storing illegal stuff in the cloud, because you don't have any coherent files within that contribution, nor is it possible to create any.
Oh, that's cool. I like that. That's a good thing for people to know. Now, what about security? How secure is a person's data that's being, you know, there might be, I don't know, 10 different people's data or 100 different people's data stored on my terabyte space. So how, you know, you said it's encrypted, but, you know, how secure is that for the actual data owner?
So the data is definitely encrypted at the source before it leaves your firewall, before it leaves your premises, right? So it's we use AES 256 encryption. It's a military-grade encryption. And then furthermore, we take that encrypted block and we divide it up into these tiny fragments. And so no one entity, no one customer in our system has all the pieces required to reassemble a block. They just don't have them. They'd have to find the right 64 pieces to bring together to be able to put together an encrypted block. And even when they do that, they have to actually decrypt it. So compare this to, say, your data being stored in some data center, right, where there's a machine on a rack in some data center that's holding your data. And it's easily accessible by some disgruntled employee in the data center, or if there was ever to be a breach, your data is sitting all there in one location in the data center. So from a security standpoint, we believe our model is actually superior to the traditional model because of our distribution of data.
Now, you talked about assembling those blocks. Now, your employees, I don't know how many you have or you know, how it works exactly on your end, but you know, Dropbox has had some problems where people have accused them saying, you know, your employees could actually decrypt people's files and get at their data. And I actually did an article on that, making fun of that very thing. But how does it work on your end?
So a lot of our customers will actually use encryption software to encrypt the data even before giving it to us. Our employees have access to metadata. It would be very hard for anybody here to be able to collect all the data because it's actually a very computationally burdensome thing to do, right? You would have to collect slices from around the world to put them back together. That's something that the agents running on your machine will do for you when you're attempting to store or download these files.
Are your customers individuals, or are they businesses, or both?
It's both. We target primarily to, the prosumers and small and medium businesses right now. But we have customers from all walks of life that come to us because they have a data problem and they don't want to pay the big dollars to store their data centrally. We're in 150 countries right now. This network's been running for 2 years, and we have everybody from an individual to, larger companies.
Who are your partners, if you have any major business partners?
We partner with a lot of the channel resellers, you know, IT service providers that can essentially go to small and medium businesses. So we have a pretty healthy base there. We also partner with NAS vendors, people that make the, network attached storage. And the one we're on today is QNAP. I don't know if you're familiar with them. They're a pretty substantial NAS OEM. We'll be announcing very shortly more partnerships with NAS vendors. As you can imagine, a box that serves data for a living is a very good form factor for us to be on.
If I wanted to use your cloud backup and I don't know how much space, I mean, because my space on my disk grows all the time, grows and shrinks. So how would that be determined? Is it dynamic? In other words, let's say I want to store 100 gigs, so I have to donate 200 gigs, right?
Right.
What if my 200 gigs is no longer available? What if it shrinks down to 150 because I've stored videos or something on my disk?
Sure. So that's quite simple. So there's two pieces to answering that, Ken. The first piece is that if that's your one device that's on SIMform, we will just compute essentially your balance every month. And if you need to make up for some of your data storage with bucks, you can do that. Our rate is very competitive. We charge 15 cents per gigabyte per month. So even if you wind up having to pay partly in bucks and not all in bytes, it's no big deal and it won't cost you much, especially compared to our competition. The other answer to this is that the contribution to consumption balance is done on an account-wide basis, and so we have a lot of customers that will set up a secondary device just to be the contribution device, and so that will cover all their contribution, and then they can backup data from that one or other devices. So the contribution to backup ratio is done at an account-wide level. That's a great service that our MSPs provide, by the way, is they'll kick in the contribution and then not make their end user customers even worry about that.
Right. So essentially, if I'm, have a different use or donation or, contribution, I guess you'd call it, it's assessed on a monthly basis. So one month I'm probably cool and another month I might not be. And so it is relatively dynamic, right?
It is dynamic and, it's automatic. And each month you receive a statement. And if you've covered everything in contribution, then the statement just says thank you. And if you haven't, then it'll an invoice for that you sent me by phone.
Practically, though, what happens is, people's data is growing. It's not shrinking. The nice thing about our approach is that you don't have to pick and choose which data you want to store in a data center. You just store everything because it's really cheap. Hey, we're free, right? And so I don't know about you, but I have about 400 gigs at home with, photos and two kids, videos and all that. That data is growing at a tremendous rate right now. I don't have to think about this. I could just store it all and continue to store it all. And if I have to buy more space or get a NAS device and throw in the closet contribute, that covers my contribution for, the 5 years or so. That to me is a much easier model than having to pay a monthly bill to Amazon or a monthly bill to Mozi or whomever. We can show how if you compare purchasing and standing up a NAS device or another drive, if you compare that to using a competitor's cloud storage, the payback time on that NAS device is very short, often less than a month, depending on which competitor you're comparing us to. So again, the economics really work well. And by the way, if you think about the way that things are trending, the gap between the amount of data that people need to store and the amount of traditional data storage that is being built, that gap is widening. So the data centers, the traditional data centers, cannot keep up with the rate of data that people need to store. As that happens, prices are, we believe, inevitably going to rise for data center storage. And at exactly the same time that that's happening, the two things that we depend on, local drives and bandwidth, are both getting cheaper. So we feel that this we're in a great, great
position. Ken, just to give you some numbers on that, because I think it's, you know, that's kind of what inspired us to start Simform. In 2009, IDC estimated that there'll be 9 zettabytes of data, right? The digital footprint in 2009. At that time, if you were to take the largest data center provider, that would be Google. They had 1 million servers in 2009. You'd need 160 Googles to store that data in a data center. You know, we only have one Google. You'd need 160. In 2014, IDC says that the number will be 40 zettabytes. And if you assume that Google will quadruple in size by that time, you still need 400 Googles. So this is the gap that's widening that Tim is mentioning. We can't sustainably put all data that people are generating in data centers. And as a result, data center storage is going to come at a premium. It will become more of a premium. And so people still want the ubiquitous access to data. They still want the anytime, anywhere access. They want the protection of, you know, cloud storage. Well, how are they going to get it? We believe that the only way they're going to get it is through peer-to-peer architecture. There is no other sustainable way.
Right. In fact, you know, here's an interesting tech question for you. Let's say that I'm actually contributing 1 terabyte for the 0.5 terabyte storage, and my disk goes bad, and, you know, it takes me 2 or 3 days to get that replaced. Do I have to do anything in that replacement?
No. Like, if you remember earlier, we said that we built a system that assumes that every single part of it is unreliable. So we'll call your node a loss. We'll call your disk a loss. Just plug in a new disk so they don't get charged, and our system will recover very nicely.
So what about the charges to an individual if my disk is actually offline for, say, 3 or 4 days while I'm getting a replacement?
Doesn't matter. We because the assessment is done really on the basis of the amount that you're contributing rather than the integrity of the fragments that are on your drive. So if you happen to have that disk, you know, down at the moment that we take our snapshot, and we don't see that contribution, you know, that would be something where we can easily, you know, make an exception on the bill.
And if you disappear for 3 weeks and not contribute, then we'll bug you about it, right? But if you're essentially saying that, oh, I lost the disk, we understand that hardware failures happen. We see them too. And if you're replacing it takes you 3 to 4 days, it's not a big deal. Our system is not relying on your single disk to guarantee the integrity of the data stored in it.
Okay, but in other words, my backup, my 0.5 terabyte of data on your system that I'm supposed to be trading out is still safe and okay, even without my contribution.
Absolutely.
Because you'll charge me for it.
Yeah,
on the
your account,
if I don't.
Yeah, your account would still be in good holding. It's the only time we would get rid of your data is if your account, you've left the system or you asked us to delete the data that's stored in the system, or your account has become, you know, overdue, or that we all, you know, non-payment or any of those things.
Right. But, well, guys, I got to tell you, I'm having a hard time finding anything wrong with this, which is totally out of character for me.
we love your question. You know, you're getting right at the things that have been so fundamental to us to answer as we develop.
Ken, I think part of why, you know, it's probably worth talking about how a lot of the other companies that are in the centralized storage business, you know, running data centers and paying the data center footprint, they do play a lot of games. There is a lot of throttling of bandwidth. There's a lot of limits on file sizes, limits on file types.
limits on where you can upload from and how you can upload, or, you know, because at the end of the day, they're having to play these games to save on the very expensive data center bill they get every month, right? Part of the reason that we are so lax about it and we don't have any of these, you know, throttling limits and file exclusions and limit what files is because we don't have the same economics. You know, everybody's on the GAP engine. We've built the hybrid, right? It's very different. So we don't have the same economics, and that's partly why I think you're struggling with finding, well, what's the catch? There is no catch. Just contribute at a 2-to-1 ratio, and you're good.
Right. So do you also support iDevices like Apple iPads and Android devices as well in that same account?
We don't today, Ken. Certainly we're looking at that going forward. As you can imagine, the iOS devices and portable devices wouldn't probably be ideal profiles for contribution, but certainly for backup and sharing and that sort of thing, it makes sense. So that's certainly under a lot of consideration right now. It's not the market that we're principally targeting, but guess what? Every market that we want to go after uses the devices. So I think the best two words for me to give you are stay tuned.
Right. Yeah, that is very important because so many people carry these things around. In fact, everybody in my house has an iPhone. My business phone is an Android. I have an iPad. So, you know, it's pretty important that I don't lose that data. I mean, there's iCloud, of course, but frankly, it would be nice to have a way of having that secondary backup so I could actually get physical access to that stuff. If I decide, say, to use a different vendor. I might not want an iPhone next time. So is my stuff all just lost or what? You know, so yeah. It would be nice to have that ability.
So we absolutely agree. We're eating the elephant one bite at a time, but we totally agree with you.
Okay. And how about getting connected to the service?
Sure. They just visit www.simform.com, S-Y-M-F-O-R-M, and the steps are right there on the website. It's pretty easy to download and get set up and get started quickly.
So if I started at, say, 2 p.m., how quickly could I be backing up my data?
That was 2:15 sound. it really depends. The wizard, like so many things, the setup wizard is, if you accept all of the defaults in the setup wizard, it's really fast. If you decide to make some tweaks, let's say to the schedule for how bandwidth is used, that sort of thing, or if you take a while selecting which folders you want to back up, it take a bit longer. But, you know, I think it's if you go fairly straightforward with the defaults and you pick a folder or two that you want to back up, you can really get it going very, very quickly. You know, you don't have to set up contribution right on day one. You can start backing up your stuff immediately. And if you want to come back to setting up contribution in a day or two, or if you want to set that up on a different device, that's quite easy to do.
Thanks for listening. My guests today have been Simform's CTO and co-founder Bassam Tabara and Director of Product Management Tim Helming. See you next time on the Frugal Networker and ZDNet's Virtually Speaking.